Hey, it's Future Jimmy. If you're listening to this episode and you did not listen to our regular scheduled Oscars episode, hey, go back and listen to that. We basically recorded this all in one chunk, and upon listening back, it was far too long, so I decided to break it up into two episodes. So this is your bonus coverage episode for Dune and all things Dune related. So that's why if the conversation seems like it just kicks right off, that would be why. But yeah. This is the four of us, Dave, Tony, me, and our special guest, Avnish, talking about the new part two, small independent French-Canadian film, Dune, by Mr. Denis Villeneuve. Hope you enjoy.
So,
I do.
We should talk about
but
this.
But I want to talk about
this independent,
small independent French Canadian film.
From a French Canadian auteur.
Indie auteur.
Yeah, but before we get into that, we need to shame Tony for not seeing it in IMAX.
What?
Tony. I would just like to also point out that James drove two cities away to avoid paying premium prices on a movie and still paid premium prices because of the gas money that he wasted going there.
Well, I didn't
avoid. You saw Beekeeper in Oakville.
That's the Beekeeper.
Wait,
No,
I did not see Beekeeper in Oakville.
When did you? What do you mean?
Okay, that's right. I did go see Beekeeper in Oakville. Yeah.
So again. No,
and again, also, I was at hockey. So I was already most of the way there. I had to go one exit over. So my gas was already spent regardless. Thank you very much.
But why doesn't everyone just have Cine Club and then...
Oh, I do.
Oh, then why did you have to do this?
Because I didn't want to pay for a premium.
And there you go.
Because it wasn't
I didn't want to pay for premium because I'm tired of paying for premium. It was in regular, so I saw it in
regular. It was Dune Part 2. It was a premium.
I'm going to drop some knowledge on it. I fucking hated the movie, and I'm glad I didn't see it in premium.
Well, Tony's off the podcast.
I'm going to throw this table at you.
I'm just covering the ears.
Yeah, cover Shai's ears.
He doesn't need to hear this.
He's the maker.
I almost fell asleep multiple times during the movie.
That's because you saw it in regular.
Nope, that's not the reason.
If you had the IMAX speakers, they'd keep you awake.
I wish I did, because you know what? The theater that I went to...
Was it a Stars and Strollers performance?
I wish, buddy. There's a certain scene in the movie.
Don't worry, Shai.
We still love you.
Buddy, I thought the speakers were going to blow because I could hear the crackling. And I'm like, yep, this is what I get for not seeing it in IMAX. You know what? Yep. I'm just going to ride it out. I'm not going to yell at anybody. You know, there's streaks on the side of the screen for 90% of the movie. And I'm like, you know what, man? This is what I get. This is karma. But yeah, I'm just going to ride it out. I'm going to ride it out, man.
Good old Cineplex.
Yeah,
Cineplex always delivering. But
you sat there and you're going to sit here and tell me that you're happy you went to a fucking premium screening of The Beekeeper.
I had a fucking blast during Beekeeper. I don't know about you guys.
Course we had a blast watching it, but it's not Denis Villeneuve's Dune Part 2.
I need context. What are your thoughts on Dune Part 1?
Dune Part 1? Yeah. Well, my opinion has changed about Part 1 since I've seen Part 2. I'm going to be really honest with you guys. I don't really like Dune. I don't like it. I've tried so hard. I've seen Dune Part 1 twice, and I haven't been able to see it in one sitting. I never saw Dune Part 1 in the theater. I remember rushing to see it before it got nominated for Best Picture, just to make sure that I saw all the Best Picture nominees. I had an appreciation for it then. I liked it a little bit less the second time I saw it. And then going into Part 2.
Duncan Idaho died for the Mujahideen. And you can't respect the film?
I don't know what to tell you guys. Like, I honestly tried so hard. But you know what? I think it was a little bit overhyped for me, Part 2. Okay. I think it was a little bit overhyped because people were telling me that it was like wall-to-wall action. and that had more action than the first one. It did. And it did, but I kind of like the action scenes better in the first one. Okay. Like that end sequence is still an all-time banger. Like when the Harkins come down and they just lay fucking waste to the House of Atreides, that scene is next level. And
it's not even the end.
It's not even
Harkadens.
Sorry.
Or Harkodens.
Oh God, only if you're fucking David Lynch. Jesus.
That scene was an all-timer for me.
What's the other group called?
Sardaukar.
Sardaukar.
Which ones are the Sardaukar?
Sardaukar, the Emperor's Army.
Okay. I didn't get that same feeling with the second one. Now, is it because I saw it in fucking regular? Maybe. Is it because I was forced to see it on Friday night instead of Sunday morning like I wanted to? Maybe. I just couldn't get behind it. And I'm going to give a big shout out to my wife. She is a fucking angel, because I turned to her at one moment in the thing and I was like, buddy, I am passing out. I need to go. I'm leaving. I'm going to go get some candy. I'll be back. She was like, no, you need to watch this. You stay here. I'll go and get the candy. And she left and grabbed it.
Well, big shout outs. Big shout outs.
Big shout outs to Melissa for sure.
She's your Lisa and Olga.
Yeah.
Yes. She's your Quasar Tamarack. what is it about Dune that doesn't work for you?
I don't know.
Looking at it holistically, looking at part one and part two for Denis Villeneuve's, and we can talk about the other aspects of Dune later, but
part two just felt so fucking long.
Really?
Again, I don't know if it's because I was forced to see it on Friday night when I wanted to see it on Sunday morning.
Why didn't you just go on Sunday morning?
Because you know what? When your wife says that she's stressed out because of the weekend and she wants you to see the movie on Friday, you do what your wife says.
All right. Fair. Okay. And also, you know what? And to Tony's credit as well, he did just get over the bubonic plague. So compressed in time for watching this.
And that probably changed because I saw Dune Part One when I was like literally like sick as a fucking dog. So I'm pretty sure I hallucinated some of that movie.
I don't think you did.
No, I was all there for sure. I don't know. Like I just
be better if you hallucinated. Part of it might have been.
I just can't. I don't know if it's me, if it's Denis, if it's Shalalud.
Well, it most certainly is not Shy Halud.
It has never been.
You apologize now.
I
didn't mean it.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I can appreciate it. I will not. I'm not going to shit all over this movie. I know the achievement it is. I know that it's a landmark film, and like the everything about it, I can appreciate. I just don't like it.
That's completely fine. The way you phrased it, there's nothing to even push back on, because it's like, all right, I totally get what's good about this. Yeah. It's just not for me.
It's just not for me. Lord of the Rings, same thing. Yeah. Fucking a cinematic achievement. Yeah. Just not for me.
That's it's a Shonda, Tony. It's a Shonda.
But I will say, like, since you mentioned it was long, I thought it was the shortest long movie I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
Like, those credit rolls, and I was like, I need 30 minutes more.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing? Why is this already over?
Yeah.
And then I looked at the time and I was like, oh no, it's actually been a while. Like
it whipped through.
Yeah.
Not for you, sir, but I'm telling you it did. It flew past, at least for me.
I thought the first half flew. I think it slowed down a bit after what's his nuts shows up.
And that's when
Fade Rautha. When he shows up, I felt it did start to slow down a little there, and then they picked
was
it
that,
back up.
Was that Butler?
Yes.
Okay. So that is where I started struggling. That scene between him and Dave, the French girl that Dave loves.
Seydou.
Léa Seydoux.
That scene is where I was just like, man, I need a kicker, because like if I don't get the kicker now, like I'm gonna pass the fuck out.
It needed to, like, holistic, like thinking about the entire plot of Dune, it needed to rush through a lot at the beginning. It could have definitely been paced a little bit differently towards the beginning and probably balanced itself out, so it wouldn't have had to hit the brakes so hard once it got to House Harkonnen and the entire battle with Fade Rautha.
Even though it looks amazing.
Wild. That whole thing is wild. So
beautiful. Coliseum scene, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That wild. Wild.
Amazing.
So beautiful.
Yeah. Shot in black and white and infrared.
Yeah.
Nuts. Looks
you can tell. Incredible. Amazing. Yeah. Incredible like cinematography.
The sharpest contrast I think I've ever seen on film ever in my life.
Yeah.
And just like the transitioning in color scheme.
Yeah.
When you could
see, yeah, when they're when under the sun versus going, not. Like, yeah. So, it's just yeah. It was very cool.
Art.
Cinema. Yes, they could have fixed that pacing a bit and not had to pump the brakes so hard. But the thing is, they kind of rushed up to that point, and then from Phaedrotha onwards, it is pretty much a linear run to the end. Like yeah. They don't have to skip over much because there's nothing much left to skip over. They've gotten to the point. Now it's like, all right, and now we can set to the end. But they had to scooch through the beginning because there's a lot that needs to happen, including the wonderful Learn the Ways montage, which I wish was scored like an 80s movie because yeah. It deserved like a needle drop right there.
But
like Push It to the Limit came on and he's just like walking across the sand or something.
But even yeah. That it felt like it had scenes missing. So I
yeah
loved the film,
but sure.
One of just, you know, especially when I watched it the second time, it didn't bother me as much because I knew what was happening. But yeah. The first time I felt like in the beginning and in the end, there were specific moments. Do we just go into details, like straight dive in?
Sure. Yeah. Say okay, what so, you say what you want.
Like in that montage, the part where Chani joins him yeah. And because she's worried that he's not going to make it alone.
Yeah.
And then you feel like, okay, you're going to see these two do this thing now. But then it just...
Just cuts away from it. Yeah.
To like an action scene that, oh, yeah. All of that is done. Like he yeah. Did the thing and now he's part of the crew and now yeah. They're like carrying out this attack. And yeah. That was just so jarring the yeah. First time.
Yep.
Second time I knew it was coming. So it was fine. And then even later on in the movie, when Phaedrotha is taking over.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he's attacking their home yeah. To force them to go to the south. And it's just like, if they knew this was here the whole time, why didn't Bautista do this? You know, like why did Fade have to? But there's yeah. Something missing. I felt there.
Yeah.
And that and apparently that they go into that in the books, like how how they actually figure it out or find the base or whatever. So that yeah. Was just.
But they also condense it in this movie. Yes. It's a lot long. I don't know much about the book, but yeah. It's a lot longer.
Yeah.
Period.
No, so the entirety of this part two of this movie does not take place over what feels like weeks in this case, or months, I guess, when we're looking at, you know, the pregnancy level of Rebecca Ferguson. It's not months. It's years. Like it's supposed to take place over a long, long period of time, and for the
which
sake
makes,
of
which makes more sense
yeah.
Logistically.
Yeah. Like, have you seen the original or not the original David Lynch's Dune?
I have not.
All right.
I told him it was required reading for this.
It was that or American Fiction. I had to choose.
Okay, fine.
I literally just finished up Dune before we started this.
Did you like it?
I have thoughts.
I'm looking forward to
it. Yeah. But like there's a like his sister is supposed to be born. Like it's right. Supposed to be a full functioning character
yeah.
That does things and not just an Anya Taylor-Joy jump scare. like so there was choices.
It wasn't just talking fetus.
Yeah, it wasn't just talking fetus.
There was
a lot of talking fetus in the book.
That was fucking weird.
There's a lot of talking fetus in the book.
Oh, God. They pulled that from Blonde because it's very much talking fetus movie.
Oh, Jesus.
So so I understand what Denny decided to do ultimately with this. Like Monsieur Villeneuve decided to condense it
yeah.
And make it more approachable in the sense of like, okay, we don't have to deal with like years of time. We don't have to drag this out forever. It probably could have been three movies if they really wanted to, but I understand condensing it into two longer big parts. Something's got to give. Like something has to happen where there's going to be a piece that you're going to be like, yeah, I feel like they could have expanded here, but
yeah. And again, it didn't bother me the second yeah. Time. Just yeah. The first time it felt a bit jarring, but the second time when I yeah. Knew what to expect and when I had already in my mind, like filled in the blanks, essentially.
Yeah.
I actually liked those decisions then because I was like, okay, so this is how he's just keeping the tension level raised the whole time, essentially, because there's that sense of urgency throughout almost. And if that was, if they had done it over years or whatever, it might have completely compromised that.
But like that last sort of battle where they're sieging the Emperor's ship and you know, that whole thing is taking place. Minus the changes that I already kind of mentioned, where the fact the sister's not even born and not even a consideration and everything else. So there's things that they had to change with the story in order to make that still happen. When I listened to the audiobook of it. When I listened to the audiobook of that, it's almost shot for shot of exactly kind of what I had pictured in my head of like it being described to me. I think Villeneuve did a very, very good job of bringing that to screen. And like it was insane. It was loud. There was fucking worms coming out of everywhere. There was atomic bombs going off. And then, you know, they capture everyone. And then the final battle between Fedrautha and Paul Muad'Dib, Usul, Wizard Haderach, fucking Mary Sue of fucking names. Jesus Christ.
He's not a Mary Sue.
He's a Mary Sue.
He is not. Don't do that. Don't be that guy.
I'm gonna.
Don't be that guy.
He's everything.
He's the Muad'Dib.
He is the Muad'Dib. I spent the whole week after seeing that movie just wandering around my house yelling Muad'Dib and like everything. Like I'd open a cupboard and be like Muad'Dib as written.
Did the cat appreciate that?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Mouse is my usul. Anyway, yeah, I really liked the last bit. Like that fight was perfect between a very bald Elvis and Timothy Chalamet.
He was fucking creepy, Austin Butler. Like what a performance he gave.
I was really worried he was gonna be like space Elvis and just like coming with that southern drawl that he's never been able to let go of, apparently. I was very happy he wasn't. But he was fucking creepy.
He was nuts. He was certifiably nuts. Melissa turned to me at one point and she was just like, is that Austin Butler?
Cover most of his bald head and he could have been Pennywise.
Could have been.
He's creepy enough for it.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Especially when they were doing like those down angle shots. Like that man's a creep show.
Do you think he's the best villain since Heath Ledger's Joker?
No. No. Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
Who's ever saying that? Like, really?
People can fuck off.
They can fuck right off.
Hyperbole about it.
They can fuck right off.
And that he's a shoo-in for supporting actor.
No!
He's a shoo-in for a nomination for supporting actor, sure.
It's fucking March, guys. Let's pump the brakes.
I feel like that was more like fan accounts. Like, no serious people were saying that. Like,
they were noting that he was very good.
It was a good performance. Yeah. I don't think the best villain of all time. I don't think Fedrautha is the best villain of all time in general.
He's a lot better here than he is in David Lynch's fucking Sting. Okay. Whatever Sting's wearing in that movie.
Okay.
Can I? Are we getting right into David Lynch?
No, please go ahead. Don't take me there yet.
Another thing I wanted to point out during the movie, it was Melissa's like running commentary because like she got like the two cent recap. Because I sent her a recap video before the movie.
Oh, sure.
And she didn't watch it. So I was like, okay, great.
Right?
So I had to like recap the first one in 30 seconds. And I did a pretty good job. So during the movie.
I don't even know how you do that.
I gave the Coles notes, basically. During the movie, there's
a scene.
Did you
explain the entire struggle between House Atreides and House Harkonnen?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
How it's been going on for
centuries. We get it. So anyways. There's a scene with Stellan Skarsgård where he's in the goop.
Yes.
And he like comes out of the goop and then comes back into the goop. Right. She turns to me and she's like, yo, Tony, who's the guy in the goop?
That's the Baron.
That's the Baron. He's the leader of the Harkonnens. Yes. And she's like, oh, okay. And then she was just like, well, what does he do? And I was like, Just watch.
He lives in the goop.
He's the goop guy.
He's the goop guy.
But I just love her turning to me, like, so who's the guy in the goop?
Who's Mr. Goopy over here?
Another great performance by Stellan Skarsgård for sure. He's great at that role. And just seeing like the way he portrays it versus the one in Lynch's, it's just fucking weird.
Okay, we're gonna get to Lynch. So we will get to Lynch.
That's me putting a pin because there's a certain scene in Dune that I rewatched before the podcast just to make sure that it still happened and didn't happen in the director's cut. Oh, it did.
Oh, it did.
So that's me, sweet boy, putting a pin in that.
Yeah.
We'll come back to that.
I think my issue And my only real issue with Dune Part 2 is I really like that first hour of him learning the trade and kind of push it to the limit and all of that. I think it's so well done.
Yeah.
I really get a sense of, you said he's a Mary Sue. I don't think he's a Mary. I think you're actually seeing him in real time learning the trade, putting in the effort. He's not just.
Sure.
He's not Rey Skywalker. Sure. Okay.
He wants to be a fighter.
He wants to be a fighter. Yeah. Sure. He's doing what he's got to do.
And he wants to
honor
the people and he wants to do it right. He doesn't want to just be like, because he knows that he's like born to be king, right? But he doesn't want to just jump to that.
Right.
And I like seeing them fight. I really love that scene where he's with Chani and they're blowing up the thing. I thought that was incredible. Yeah. Yeah. And then she's just running.
Absolutely.
Running and it's exploding. Yeah. Like that it's looks wild. Amazing in IMAX.
Yeah.
You fucked up.
I don't care.
Also, I don't think you haven't experienced cinema until you've seen an entire IMAX frame filled with Christopher Walken's face.
It's true. Yeah,
something
true.
I never thought I'd imagine seeing, but
it's true.
I'm a changed man.
These are true facts.
Those wrinkles have crevices, Holmes.
He was beautiful.
And I really do think they needed to do a better job of explaining Jessica becoming
Reverend Mother,
and how she was just like, yeah, they want me to do it or they're going to kill me. And it's like, well, you're still pregnant, girl. Maybe you should put up a little more of a fight.
As I think I told this to Dave at some point, that's how it goes down in the book.
But he changed Chani and he gave her more agency and she's much more. She's not as much of a pushover. Who's just like,
agree.
Cool, whatever. Yeah. So he could have at least put in like a 3 second, like, so I'm pregnant.
No. So it has to go down that way because Arya needs to exist. You can't. The problem is if you put up a barrier to that, then all of a sudden now she's a shitty person. If she drinks,
she was always a shitty person.
Yeah. But it's more like it was kind of like, I think the reason was let's make it look rushed. Like it has to be done. It has to be done. So she's like kind of bewildered, like, okay, I guess I got to do it. I got to do it sort of thing. And like she has half a second thought of like, fuck, I don't know, but okay. But I don't know that there's any other way to do it. It has to happen. She's a piece of shit anyway, because she put Arya at risk for it, but Arya also has to be created for a lot of reasons.
But she also put Paul at risk.
Yes.
And she did all, then she's with the fucking Bene Gesserit pulling the fucking strings and all that bullshit. Anyways, I love all that first stuff. And then when it gets to Fade Rautha and then Lea Seydou shows up and there's that whole
to take his seed.
And then it's all building to something, but you don't need it in the movie. You can just keep going. Just keep going.
Yeah.
There's certain parts where you're like, yes, I need more here. And then there's certain parts where you're like, I don't need this. Get rid of this. I think keep going. And if you're going to change certain things and you're going to pull things out because your boy Fearfoot, what is it?
Thufir
got cut right out.
Yeah.
Tim Blake Nelson got cut right out. He's not going to show us the deleted scenes, even though Thufir is an important part of what happens next.
Yeah.
If you're going to cut all that shit out.
Yeah.
And you're still going to go with your whole Bene Gesserit thing. That's fine. But you still don't need. You don't need this. You didn't need her scene in there. You don't need it there.
Yeah, well, with the outcome of it, you don't. But I know, and I think they could have done it differently. They could have avoided that whole thing and still gotten the point across. Because like I know the entire point is it's trying to balance this like
that he's a monster who can be tamed.
Not the Fade Rautha part, actually, not at all. I'm talking more generally that Dune is supposed to be. It's showing you how fucked up messiahs can be. And like what the whole Bene Gesserit point is like, it's not even real. Like they manufactured this. Yep. And so like we've manufactured it once. If this fucks up, we're just going to do it again. And that's why we have like that. That was his whole point, is just like it was trying to like, if you don't have that, then all of a sudden it looks like Paul was always meant to be this. He's going to be a messiah. And this is exactly what needs to happen. It was always going to happen. And, you know, he's Jesus Christ reincarnate. And like they mentioned it, the Bene Gesserit mentioned it, like this hasn't happened in their age. Like, it hasn't happened for ages. There's also, like, a whole lot in the book that actually involves the Bible in ways. And, like, it comes back as, like, an old text that someone's reading. Like, it's fucking weird.
But in The Matrix, which obviously pulls from Dune.
Yeah.
They're like, you're not the first time we tried this. You could have just done the same thing and kept it going.
It's just a cool as fuck scene. She approaches him, seduces him. It's just
Of course, she's gonna seduce him.
No, but it was just the voice on him. He wasn't completely willing.
And then they have a chance to get the box out again. I just think it's a good scene. Like, when she got the box out, the audience responded well to it, and I think that's why they wanted to keep it in. I think the first time I watched it, we spoke a bit, and we felt like maybe more similar on this. But the second time I watched it, I was like, I don't want anything cut. Just add things. Sure. Yeah. I could have done with an extra 10, 15, even 20 minutes filling some stuff out, but I wouldn't want to lose.
And a man about my boy Thufir.
Yeah.
That's the scene I would lose. And I would add, but I would add in a little bit more struggle when he gets to the south and he has to fulfill his destiny.
He just kind of like
walks up, maybe. Yeah. And then he just kind of walks up. He's like, yo, give me the juice type thing. I think there should have been more of a struggle there.
There should have been more
with Chani if you're going to give her the agency and how she reacts afterwards to it. I feel like there should have been like a little more of, don't do this.
I just read it like once he has that conversation with Hamas, he's just decided already. He's like, I got to do this. That's the only way. I got to see where this takes me. It's the only way to get clarity. And even with Chani, like they get her to do what she needs to do by using the voice on her, right? If I remember correctly.
Yes.
Because she doesn't want to do it, but she's forced into doing it. That I didn't mind at all. I just thought the film was just ripping at that point. And it just, it was a bit chaotic, but...
Yeah, it struggled a bit. Like, that's where it struggled a bit was... And again, in the book, they spend a little bit more time in the South, and he kind of has to come to the realization that the South is filled with fanatics, which they kind of do a little bit of when he makes that speech. But at that point, it's too far gone. Like, he's already like...
He's embraced it.
I am. Like, that it is what it is.
And that's a great scene, and I really like that scene. I just
the struggle buildup that he has in the book, I think, gets lost in this work. Yeah, he literally just rolls to the south, and he's like, "All right, deuces, I'm gonna go drink this blue juice." Like, that's not, and he just rolls in. And it's like, "No, you can't have that." He's like, "Yes, I can." And then, all right, like, all right, peace. And then he's in a coma for like months in the book. Like, again, the timeline compression. It's like months. This was like what, 12 hours, and they're like, "Get Johnny down here."
Desert Spring.
Yeah.
Diaz.
So maybe that. Oh shit!
You got so excited.
I dropped the mic.
Wasn't even a mic drop moment.
So maybe that is what I have the issue with. Is that. Maybe they needed to make it clearer that there should be more time.
I agree.
And I feel like that's it. Because, it does feel chaotic. You use the right word. Chaotic.
Yeah.
It's chaotic. Getting from here to here.
Yep. Yeah.
And then Dave Bautista's so good. And they did him dirty. They didn't really... I don't know. That felt very inert.
They glossed over Raban. I mean, they kind of talk about Raban. Totally
glossed over him. And him with Josh Brolin. Like, I understand this, but it just kind of didn't feel very organic.
Yeah. They did, I think, as the bare minimum of what they had to do with Raban, which is just basically like, okay, we put him back in charge. Okay, he's fucking up constantly. And he's not really fucking up. He's just dumb. And the Fremen are smarter. And that's it. Like, he's underestimated the Fremen by a long shot. And that's really all that's happened. And they allude to, and they do a decent enough job with it, especially with like the little showdown between him and Fade Rautha. But
again, maybe that's not, it. Maybe they just needed to make it clear that.
Exactly. They didn't show enough of.
They've been at it for a little bit, as opposed to just like one scene. And then the next scene, like, yo, Raban, you're fucking up. Fade. You're in.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a couple of attacks, I think. We saw a couple of scenes of the Fremen overpowering them. And I just found like this whole thing summed up by when the Emperor comes in the end and he's like, you fucks, you have no idea that there's this whole other group of people living there. Yeah. You've been ruling this planet for how long?
Which is legitimately from the books, too. Like, they have there's like 10,000 Fremen.
What are you doing? Like,
there's like a few thousand Fremen is like the best estimate the Harkonnens ever come up with. And it's like millions. Like, they're just so fucking anyway. They're just fat, greedy. Like, I don't know. Haris Harkonnen has always been fat and greedy. And like, that's their whole thing is greed in general. And I'm glad that we got rid of the icky stuff. Because there's a lot of icky stuff in the book that needs to not exist.
Which is in the Lynch version.
Some of it is in the Lynch version.
Some in the Lynch version. Yeah. I think visually it's spectacular. Yeah. I think the visuals are incredible. And it's nice to see a movie where they didn't skimp on the visual effects. And shot some of it legitimately.
Only time I struggled a bit was with the massive crowds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. But I think that's not a problem specific to this movie. That's just something.
We haven't fully figured out massive crowds. Yeah. We've been doing like the same thing since Lord of the Rings.
I was watching this show on Amazon, Daisy Jones and the Six, and they're playing, like, they're performing to a sold out stadium of fans. And every time they cut to the fans, it just looks horrible. Apart from that, the visuals completely on board. Yeah.
And cinematography, excellent.
Yeah.
Visuals, makeup, just the works. Like, it did very well, kind of like Dune Part 1 was very visually stunning, and this one just kind of kept
continued.
Yeah. The train a moving. And I like the ending. I was left very similar to the first one where I was like, let's keep going, guys. Let's see what comes next.
Give it to me now.
Bring it on. Bring it on. Let's see what comes next. And I thought, what's her name was good. Florence.
Yeah.
Yep.
I thought she was good. Great. She was very thankless role, but I thought she was good. And I like that they started with her, kind of like how they started with her in Lynch's one, which I assume is how they start the book.
Oh God, she's throughout the book.
Yeah,
every single chapter starts out with a narration from Princess Irulan talking about it's either conversations with her father where she's talking to the Emperor or conversations with Muad'Dib.
And it's prophetic almost. Been proof the first one if they had, because it's kind of like a gimmick and a motif in this one. It's like, it's not in the first one.
Yeah.
Because you understand the Emperor, even in the first one, you understand the Emperor is pulling the strings. And I feel like they could have used that a little
in the book.
More.
It's weirder because like she's talking about like conversation with Muad'Dib. So you're like, oh fuck, I already know
where this is going.
This kind of ruins. It takes the wind out of the sails a little bit because each thing is doing. But in this one, like they focus very much on like it was conversations between her and the Emperor, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Like I think they could have easily done something like that to set the stage a little bit more. You're right. I also am fine with them cutting up the space in Guild constantly. Although, and again, for David Lynch's thing, I do have to talk about the space in Guild.
We'll get there. Tony.
I was going to speak to your point. Even though I wasn't really a fan of part two, I'm definitely all in for the next one. Like, I need to see how this ends.
Yeah.
I think you should rewatch part two as well. It
probably ends badly.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I saw the Lynch one. I know how it ends. It's going to end badly.
No, of course it is. Of course. But I'm all in. I need to see how it concludes for sure. And speaking about the special effects, when... Timmy is learning how to do the sandworms.
Yeah.
And he's like falling, like when it was like that first one where like the sand like opens up and he's like kind of like falling and he's getting his footing and stuff.
Yeah.
That's when I thought the speakers were gonna blow.
Oh,
because
yeah.
like the crack, yeah. like I could hear it crackling. Because I was so like, much. So I was like, wait, like the sound design's kind of weird, right? The crackling, like, is that like the sand hitting the sandworm and everything? And like it got a little bit burned. I'm like, nope, that's the speakers.
Yeah.
Speakers are going
to
blow.
I really want to cut it to push it to the limit now.
Right?
It'd be so much better. Oh my God.
Someone should do that. That
would be epic. Hans Zimmer score, though.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Incredible. Yeah.
Next level.
You got to rewatch it. I know you didn't. Like, I think, because even as someone who really liked the movie, it just got better on the rewatch. So many of the issues I had with it, they just sort of went away.
I told you I'd go with you to go see it in IMAX.
I also have the Steelbook 4K Happy Hand Job Edition already pre-ordered. So
absolutely.
That's true.
Yeah.
The IMAX, the expanding ratio, they use it very well.
The sandworm scene that you just spoke about, you don't even see the full sandworm. You saw 60% of the sandworm. you got to watch the other 30%, 40%.
Like when the three of them are coming at them,
man.
It looks
wild.
He does very well. Like he is definitely the disciple of Chris Nolan and how Chris Nolan uses the expanded ratio.
Yeah.
He does very well.
Well, I noticed it. I noticed it more when I rewatched Dune Part 1, right? With the ratio, because like our 4K has it, right? And I see what he does with it, and it's and it looks fucking incredible. So I can only assume like the IMAX on this one is exactly the same.
Very, very good.
It is one of the best things I've seen in a theater.
Okay.
Like, period.
That's high praise.
Yeah. Like in terms of what they accomplish with pushing the cinematic experience to the maximum, the sensory experience of it. Like your mileage may vary on how much you like the film overall, but in terms of the cinema, you know?
Just, yeah, it's definitely like a once in a lifetime fucking, or once, not in a lifetime, in a generation movie.
Nice.
Like it's, I don't know, Avatar.
Oh, on like again, another movie that I did not like.
But still, when you were in the theater seeing that, like that was something that you hadn't seen before. And this is very much something you haven't really seen. Like, it's not going to play the same way on your 4K Happy Hand Job Edition.
I understand. I understand. I understand. But
I need more throat singing.
Yes.
So much more throat singing. More that
coming out of the speakers right at the beginning of IMAX just.
Yeah, the Instagram reel of the couple doing it as they're walking down.
Yeah, it's excellent. I'm not going to throat sing. I don't know how.
And I love that reel too of the guy on
the worm, going across. No one's paying attention to him. That was great.
I love that. That was amazing. It's amazing.
Stilgar has become the winner for most memed, right? Like,
that's written.
But for Javier Bardem is great.
Yeah.
Javier Bardem's always
the reason he's memeable is because he's great. No, like, he's that's so the only reason it works. So
it's like, oh, my grandparents, when I change it from HDMI 1 to 2, Lisa Nalgaid.
That's written.
And I really, I was telling James this, I really think that how they like take all the water out of the bodies, I thought was really
that's
how they
so showed cool.
that.
That's
really
so fucking cool. Yeah, I like that.
And then, as somebody else pointed out on Twitter, how they completely throw that out at the end and they're just burning bodies.
Because they don't want that.
Because they don't want the water, but they're just burning bodies because they don't care anymore. And it's kind of echoing how it looks in the first movie type thing.
Yeah, that's like, also just like a... Like, they did this thing, right? Where in the end, they just throw back to... Like, when the movie opens, you see all the burning bodies of the Atreides house. And then at the end, you see all the burning bodies of... Yeah.
The Harkonnens.
The Harkonnens. And even with
Sardaukar.
Yeah.
And Sardaukar.
With Fae Draudhaar, one of his first lines is, "You fought well, Atreides." And he says that in Victory. And then that's his last line as well. But now he's saying it in Defeat.
Yeah.
So, and they probably could have fixed the whole thing where she finds out that she was the Baron's daughter. I think they
That's a thing.
I know. I think they could have I think that should have been a little more organic where it was just like BT dubs. I didn't know that. I just found it out. Cool.
Yeah, she finds it out in the hallucination, but I mean, yeah, they could have left it for later. It bears nothing on this story.
Yeah.
I was just like, wait, what? Like it almost went over my head and I was like, wait, are they serious?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like it feels like it was just there just so he could have that line like sup cuz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when he goes grandfather and then writes the knife in. Yeah.
I do appreciate in that final battle that one guy that get after the atomics go off, he's the first to get up and he's gonna put the fucking flag back up. I'm like, buddy, come on. Do we need the flag? Yeah.
So that battle as well, the first time I watched it, I just feel because our expectations with these sort of films are so set to like, oh, big giant battle. And this thing is sort of like over as soon as it starts, because it's not even really, it's generous to even call it a battle. It's just an ambush and they completely overtake them. And the first time I was like, wait, it's done? They won already? But the second time, because I knew that, okay, that's what the story is, it just played so much better.
Yeah.
Like, And even that, the one-on-one battle that they have in the end.
Yep.
So... the way he drives the knife into him, they even, when he has the vision, he like sees that.
Yep.
And I just loved how they sort of tied all of that up together. Like, you could tell that how just meticulously thought out everything was from start to finish.
Yeah. It's good. I could sing its praises all night, but.
I will watch it again in IMAX a third time. Before
good for you.
Yeah.
He'd watch it again in IMAX for a third time if he could.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of Zendaya?
Oh,
I think that's the last thing I wanted, because we've talked about everyone else and how good everyone else is. We haven't really touched on her.
You mentioned everything that I kind of wanted to mention about Chani, about how they've changed her character, and I think Zendaya played it very well.
I thought so too. I thought she was great.
Nailed it. And she had to do so much with her eyes.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. I think it's like one of her best performances she's ever given.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like easily.
There's not, I have nothing negative or controversial to say. It's just, she's great. She's and the changes they made to her character, I think, helped her play an even better role.
It's a very physical performance.
Yep.
And even Timmy, like, I don't know.
Well, Timmy's
Timmy, buddy.
Yeah. No, but he just turned it up.
Yeah, like, he did turn it up.
Like the scene where he embraces it, in that moment, you're like, let's go. I will come into the screen and go to war with you, buddy. Yeah. Like, let's do this. Like,
when he tells the Reverend Mother to silence, that was pretty
cool. Always a good moment. That was such a good moment.
I like the moment. It's the same moment where she goes like, oh, we wanted to give him hope. And he's like, that's not hope.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, Timmy, fuck. I feel your pain, man.
Yeah.
I just dislike how the internet's like, oh, he's so good here. I didn't know he was so good before. And it's like, well, you know, he got nominated for an Oscar ten years ago.
But that's like, this is a movie star performance. That's the thing, right? Like, yes, we know he's been fantastic in like a lot of smaller films and he can give you those award-worthy performances. But this is like, I can front a franchise. I am a movie star who can also capital A act at the same time and do it all. And do it a few months after I was in a musical for families and children. Like, it's just like, it just really felt like a moment for him that, okay, he is.
He's the real deal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Lynch.
Wild.
Right?
That is an 80s movie through and through.
Oh, yeah. And low budget.
Low budget.
But low budget. Still, it's high budget for the 80s. Yeah. High budget.
Yeah, but he's not running Spielberg Lucas budgets.
Well, no, of course not. But they put money into that fucking thing.
They did.
The costumes, the set design and everything. I loved that aspect of the movie.
I liked some of its world building, I think. The sets, yes, at times, but I also find them very confining. Like, they were just like, oh yeah, what does Caladan look like? Doesn't fucking matter. Here's the inside of a castle wall. Like, yeah. So like there was some things about it where I was like, okay, it's cool. But like, I feel like all I'm getting is interior shots for this until we get to Arrakis. Like, everything was interior, interior Caladan, interior everywhere else. And then Arrakis was like exterior desert.
It's from 84.
It's fine. I'm just saying. It's just a comment on the fact that, yes, but like, I wish they kind of did a little more.
James is just being nitpicky at this point.
I think the only thing that really bothered me, that what we're talking about, was when they turn on the shields.
Yeah, it's jank.
Yeah. It's real jank. My fucking like Christ.
Ass. It's real jank.
Even then, I would have been like,
the city shield.
Like ass.
Yeah, the
city. It looks like
I'll show you the screen
of like the transparent shields.
Very blocky.
It just looks like blocks.
Yeah, it looks like blocks.
Yeah. So it's something. He did the best that he could in trying to condense a very, 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 very long story into 2 hours and 15 minutes. That's an achievement in and of itself.
It's true
that this movie exists, because and that it's mostly coherent, like because most
small pinch,
mostly coherent.
I thought your guys's
viewing of it is better than mine, I would say, because you guys both watched theatrical, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I watched the director's cut.
Yeah, that would do it.
Not the director's cut. The extended is not a director's cut.
It's true. Sorry.
Lynch took his name off the writing and directing credit for that.
The extended cut.
I think it also helped.
So I saw the 3-hour version of this.
I think it also helped that I had the Villeneuve.
Yes.
Yeah.
That I had an understanding of the film already.
Watching it after reading the book, watching it after Denis Villeneuve's helped a lot to fill in the gaps, because there are a lot of gaps.
Yeah.
But it's still mostly coherent. Mostly.
Like it's
and maybe that's why I didn't like part two as much, right? Because like I remember the Lynch version, so I'm trying to when I was going through it, I'm trying to connect. I'm like, okay, where are we in the Lynch? Because I'm remembering the Lynch. I'm like, okay, where are we in the story? Kind of thing, right? I remember these things happening.
It's hard to do.
Well, and maybe that was
chunk out of it.
Maybe that's why I didn't like Doom part two as much, right? Because I was thinking too much of the Lynch version, right?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like they land on Arrakis and then immediately they're meeting I can't even remember his name right now. Max von Sydow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a woman in
yes, correct. But the something of the change. Judge of the Change. They meet the Judge of literally in Lynch's version, Land of Arrakis, Judge of the Change. Like there's no settling into jack shit. It is like and judge. And then they do the rest of it. But
I was telling you, they got rid of him having to fight, what's his nuts?
Hummus?
Jamis.
Jamis, yeah.
Jamis. They get rid of him completely. That entire scene's gone.
I think it's in the extended one, but in the theatrical one, it's gone. It's literally like he meets up with the Fremen and he's like, what do you want to be called?
Also, hey, and you know, they say the line, you know, you have to walk with a rhythm. If you walk with a rhythm, you won't attract the worm. Big shout outs to Fatboy Slim. But then they just like get off the ship and just start walking normally along the sand. I'm like, what? What rhythm are you not walking with? I don't understand.
Where does it end? Does it end where Dune Part 2 ends? Or does it go into Messiah? Okay.
No, it ends at the same spot, just differently in the sense that, you know, Kyle MacLachlan.
Spoil how it ends. No, it's actually hilarious how it ends. It's
bananas. Sure. Kyle MacLachlan just like, he finishes fighting Faden Ralthoen, so same. Mm-hmm. You know, he wins, same, cool. And then he gives a tiny little speech and then opens his mouth and stands there for a bit. And then they cut to outside and there's beams of light hitting the sky and then it starts raining.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what?
It starts raining.
I'm sorry. Did his breath call the rain? Yeah. What is happening? Full
God mode, not just Messiah, but like
straight God. Straight up, I changed the weather of Arrakis with my mouth.
Kyle MacLachlan, come on.
It does make sense in context that it's Kyle MacLachlan.
Though, back to what Tony was mentioning about the silence moment when he silences Reverend Mother Gaius Helen Mohiam in Lynch's version. Hysterical. It's my favorite thing ever because she like falls ass over tea kettle backwards.
Yeah! It's so good.
It's got a level, the Lynch version got a level of charm. Like,
yeah. The worms are fun.
I liked it.
They show him properly getting on and, did they show him getting off the worm?
I think they do.
Yeah.
I think they do.
That whole sandworm scene, like when he's like riding it, it's like, honestly, Avnisha, like you need to find the clip because it's fucking funny. Hilarious.
It's great. It's so great.
But I saw a side by side of like his first ride and
the old one.
Yeah.
So the scene that I'm talking about that I remember verbatim from this fucking movie is it's about 40 minutes in when the leader of the Harkonnen.
Yeah.
They like basically like give him like a sacrificial lamb. If you guys remember.
Yeah.
And it's like very like he's like touched. It's like a very icky scene because I was like super fucking uncomfortable.
Really?
Yeah.
It's gross.
Tony, the book is so much worse.
Yeah, I bet.
It's gross. I bet.
So I watched the scene again on Netflix, the theatrical version. And I'm like, oh no, the extended version. It's so much worse.
Like
he pulls the thing out and he's like caressing him. And like, you know, in the theatrical, how they cut away, buddy, they don't cut away in the extended. And like, you see everything.
Young boys, Tony.
Yeah. Young boys. It was just
part of the book.
So incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And he's so fucking creepy too. Right. Cause he has all those blisters and shit on his face.
Yeah. He's like, goopy.
He's good. He's goopy, Stellan Skarsgård. Goopy, like I like that they changed.
Yeah, that was weird when he spits on Jessica.
I want to spit on you.
What? It's also
he's so like
like I like he's I like really that they updated I like how they updated that because Stellan Skarsgård, like you just put like black goop on him, okay, he's creepy,
yeah,
but this guy, like, he's haunting it my also, nightmares.
It also that guy floating was hilarious though. Like, at least like Stellan, he comes out of the goop and he's like, he looks like this monsterful powerhouse of like a huge human being. Yes, we know he's just like morbidly obese and that's all, but like he presents himself in a way of like, I have power. Whereas this guy was just like floating along,
like you can just like, tell that like the strings are just like fucking like,
yeah.
It's also a super bad look because this was the 80s when AIDS was very prevalent and nobody understood what was happening.
Yeah.
And he's all fucking covered boils and all that gross and shit. And he is very much into young boys and he's given fuck you eyes to Sting. And it's not a good look.
No.
That part aged badly.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was bad then. It's aged worse now.
Definitely.
The Spacing Guild though. Wow. What the hell is that creature design? I love it so much. It's going to haunt my dreams.
Yeah,
it's giant fucking like brain that turned into a tadpole is the only way that I can possibly describe it. And it exhales spice, which, yes, all fine. But what the fuck? And it's incredible to behold. I'm just like, what the fuck is, like, they wheel it in this tub and like the screen opens up and it's just this
it's cool as shit
man.
But yeah, it's
like I'm saying it like I don't hate it, I love it, I think it's unashamedly fucking amazing.
That's weird.
There's a level of charm to the David Lynch one. I was expecting like a full like, you know, like bomb,
a debacle,
but like, but like I was like, you know what, like this is fucking weird, but I'm like here for it.
Yeah,
I really enjoy. I genuinely enjoyed it. Like it's bad, but and it's not so bad. It's good. It's just like you said, there is a charm to it, and it's It is impressive to look at.
Of course,
Avnish, have a watch, and then
don't watch the extended. Get the theatrical.
The cast is wild too.
I feel like I have to watch it with someone to like enjoy it.
I'll watch it with you,
like, buddy.
Let's schedule this.
Like if I'm sitting alone and I throw it on and there's all this ridiculous shit happening, I'm just gonna clock out, basically.
No. Let's schedule a watch party.
It's worth watching.
It's totally worth
watching. But just hearing you describe it is also very entertaining, I must say. It might be more entertaining than the movie itself, like possibly.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to say. Yeah. Fucking Patrick Stewart is Gurren.
Patrick Stewart with his fucking, like, when he meets him later and he's got a mullet down past his shoulders.
He's so good. I love Patrick Stewart.
But it's Patrick Stewart with a mullet still in the pattern of his receding hairline. So it's just the crown that he's always had with a mullet coming down. It's so weird.
Patrick Stewart.
It's great. He's great.
Is Gurney Halleck.
Sting is Fade Routh.
Shang Yun is Chani. Our boy Jürgen is
Jürgen's
Leto.
Dean Stockwell.
Well, he wouldn't know who Dean Stockwell is.
Max von Sydow.
Virginia Madsen.
Who looks the exact same age.
Yeah.
He doesn't age at all.
And Brad Dourif is
the
Harkonnen meant that. Yeah.
Yeah, which, he's actually has a more of a part in this.
Linda Hunt is in it as well.
Linda Hunt's in it as well. Yeah. It's worth watching.
Yeah.
As a cultural artifact, it's worth watching.
As like a juxtaposition to the Dune that we now know and love.
For sure. No, I feel like Dune Part 2 has left me on such a high that I know I'm going to revisit the world before Part 3 comes out in some or the other capacity. I'm probably going to read the book.
Yeah.
I probably will watch this movie. It's before Part 3 comes out, like all of this is going to happen. Like
I'll give a shout out to the audiobook because that's the way that I did it. Yeah. And like it is a very well done audiobook that is like has multiple voice actors doing a lot of the parts. So it comes across very well. And from anyone that I've talked to that's tried to read the book, I feel like I've had a better experience by listening to it instead of reading it, because reading it, I've heard, is nothing short of just exhausting.
Yeah. I've heard it's a challenge, a real challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's sales by. It's 21 hours.
I watched Yodorowsky's Dune today.
Yodorowsky's Dune,
Yodorowsky's Dune today. And fucking, he wanted Orson Welles for the Baron.
Yeah.
And he wanted Mick Jagger.
Oh, man.
For Fade Routh.
His cast list was wild.
Jagger. Yeah. But I really like that too, and I think it's cool.
That was the first ever documentary I watched on Netflix. Was Urodusky's Dune?
It's cool as shit.
So it's a documentary.
Because he never made it.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's kind of like that Lhasa Menacha.
Kind of. It's literally like they go in, they're interviewing him. He's talking about how he kind of rose up with El Topo and the Holy Mountain, and then his next one he wanted to do was Dune, and then they kind of how he assembled his crew and how they built like a Bible type thing of what they wanted it to look like, the shot list, it's all storyboarded, and it's like a fucking it's amazing, and it's like a thick ass book, and he brought it to all the studios and they're like, this is cool, but no.
Like the concept art, Tony, is fucking incredible. Yeah, like you can vision buy that they had
at the time when they made the movie,
the
documentary, I think there's only like two copies of the book left, but I think now you can actually buy the book, read it online. I think, isn't it the idiots with the NFTs?
Yes.
Didn't they buy the book?
Yes.
Because they thought that they could make the movie and they didn't realize that buying the book doesn't give them the rights to Dune. Yeah. It just gives them...
Gives them rights
ownership
to
of that copy of the book.
Yeah.
Dumbass.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely tried to do that. But like honestly, like it was a bewildering documentary of just like you're just kind of seeing the raw creative process of someone who's like so passionate about a movie and like did all the right things to get this movie off the ground, like had the proof of concept, had the concept art, had the cast list, had everything ready, and everyone was just like, fuck no, like this is not happening. And it was just, I feel like it was all just a matter of timing, and also just like I think the budget that he wanted was like,
it was like $15 million, which was a lot in 75 76.
It's too early.
Too early. Yeah. And then kind of they're showing some of the concept art and stuff, and you're kind of like, that looks familiar. And then they show why it looks familiar.
Yeah.
Cause like H.R. Geiger, who designed the alien.
Yeah.
The alien head, he's doing stuff. It's very much, you're like, that kind of looks like the alien head from Alien.
Yep.
Sure that's enough.
Funny. Sure enough.
Amazing. He
definitely redid some of that for Alien, but that's because Jorodowski's Dune was never getting off the ground.
Yeah. But it's cool.
It is very
cool. And now I really want to watch El Topo and the Holy Mountain.
Yeah.
Cool.
So but that's something else you can add to your watch list.
It's more of a fun sort of throwaway documentary of just kind of like, this is, it's just neat to see the entire thing unfold. That was my first ever exposure to anything Dune. And I didn't even know what it was about. I heard that it was a pretty good documentary, and I think it was one of Netflix's first gets.
Probably would have been one of the first ones that would have been on Netflix.
Yeah, this was way like
it's
I'm talking
Sony
like,
classic.
Like
this is
2013 or so.
Yeah, it was a TIFF.
Early days.
Yeah,
it was a TIFF.
Yeah, so like it was. It's a worthwhile watch, at least from like an educational standpoint of just like, oh, this is kind of interesting. Like how someone in the 70s anyway went about trying to get a movie made, and how cool it could have been. And it's like almost like, oh man, like what could have been if this existed? Like how would that have influenced Lynch's Dune if it even would have happened if this came out? Like,
yeah,
it's interesting to think about and
his producer is Lea Seydoux's like great uncle or something.
Oh wow.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice.
But it's worth watching. It's worth watching. Cause I watched it because we were doing this and I thought it would be cool to watch, and I'm glad I watched it. And I like Lynch's Dune.
Yeah.
I don't love it. It's not his best work by far. And it's definitely a flawed, super flawed movie. But
it's
for a movie from 84 about this massive book.
Yeah. It's funny though with Lynch's Dune, like once I think you put it in your review too, but like once you get to that third act, holy fuck, it's just a mess.
Yeah, it's a mess.
It's just an absolute, like things are just happening and you're just like
in the extended what I felt like that too.
Yeah when I was talking about like there's certain things missing from Villeneuve's where like maybe it would help with the context. No context, it's just happening.
Yeah,
and you're just sitting there just like, let it happen.
Having both kind of helps though, of like you have Villeneuve's, it's a little bit more like has a few more of the things, and some of the things that aren't in Villeneuve's are in Lynch's, and it's like, oh, you can kind of piece together almost the complete story by having
That's why I said I think I appreciated Lynch's more because I had already seen Villeneuve's.
Yeah, and I think then so too.
You also had read the book, so I probably
it helps a lot because like when you were saying you were watching and going, you were waiting for the next thing that was like, oh, I remember this happened in Lynch's. For me, it was, oh, I remember this from the book. I know exactly what's fucking coming next.
And apparently, like when the movie came out, they had to like hand out glossaries when you bought the ticket.
Oh, God.
That explained all the words to you.
Was it just the opening of the extended version that just like gives you all of the backstory?
No, that I think it's in both versions, but it's just like,
yeah.
Muad'Dib.
Muad'Dib.
Shai'ulud. Fremen. Mentat.
Yeah.
Bene Gesserit. Just explaining what everything is, which is helpful because if you don't know anything about Dune, you're just like,
in a two hour 15 minute movie, you don't have enough time. The problem is your time is your enemy. Like, you don't have time to set this up. Like, you needed two parts of Dune in order to not need a fucking glossary when you watch it. Like,
well, they got, if they made it a proper 3 hour movie, I think they could have done a better job. It still would have been rushed, but I think it would have been better received then.
Yeah.
Well, you just cut stuff, right? Don't try to squeeze everything in. Cut a few characters and subplots and make the best you can in that way.
Which is what Villeneuve did.
Anyway, I think all of this to say and to wrap our Dune conversation. Tony hates Dune, and I love Dune. And
it's not for me.
And as you said, the candles have gone out for Shai'ulud.
And our Shai'ulud, our Shai'ulud shrine is no more. It tells me that it's time to wrap up this podcast. We wasted two candles on Tony's hatred of Dune.
I didn't, man.
I'm just
wasn't
busting
me.
Your nuts.
Also, before we close, Sisterhood of the Dune. Is that what it's called?
Sisterhood of the Traveling
TV,
Dune?
The TV show?
Oh.
Is that going more into depth with like Rebecca Ferguson's character and like those people? Is
the Bene Gesserit?
Yes, the Bene Gesserit.
That's my understanding.
I think so. Yes.
Okay, because like when I was watching it, I was just like, "Oh, like I guess this is where the TV show is going to leave off."
That's my understanding.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more. It's going to be Bene Gesserit focused. Perfect. Which, great.
Sure.
Cool.
Sign me up. I'll watch it.
I will put my hand in the box every time.
What's thing? In the box? Pain.
Do we think it's winning Best Picture, or do we think it's a little too early to make those claims?
It's not winning Best fucking Picture.
It's getting nominated.
It will be nominated.
It's going to be nominated.
There's 10 films. It's going to be nominated.
It's going to be nominated.
Is it going to clean up and get all the
technical awards?
All the technical awards
probably.
Again?
Probably.
Yeah. Can it get more than six, I think. That's because the first one got six, right? Yeah. And can it get any acting nominations at all? I think.
There's a chance.
Well, Lord of the Rings only got one. The whole time it was only one, and everybody keeps comparing it to Lord of the Rings.
That was even both of them are ensembles, but I feel like in this one, Paul is more of a central figure than anyone in Lord of the Rings was. So he might, they do like him.
They do.
It depends on how the year shakes out, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see what the rest shows up.
And
so we do think it's too early to make these jumps.
Yeah, we can safely say that it's going to be nominated for a bunch of the technical awards, and it will be nominated for Best Picture. I'm pretty confident, unless some crazy ass shit happens for the rest of 2024. I'm pretty confident in that. Will it win? I'm not making that prediction now.
That's fair.
Also depends on when they announce part 3. I think if they make it very clear that part 3 is coming and coming soon, then maybe the Academy does that thing of, okay, then we'll just shower all the accolades on the next one.
What if Godzilla and Kong is the fucking Citizen Kane of movies? It's going to clean house. 9 Oscar wins. Maybe. Best actor going to Godzilla. I think that would be my most favorite moment of the Oscars.
Andy Serkis would just fucking be so pissed.
They have to cut to an acceptance speech of him in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
And Kong is there just clapping.
I'd be okay with it.
I'd be fine with it. I think it would be the most bewildering Oscars I've ever seen in my life.
They put out a great poster today where it was like, he's Godzilla. He's just Kong. You know, like the Bobby theme. Like, it was so good.
I love it.
God. I love that we have to go experience more monkey hierarchy in this one.
Hierarchy's gonna change.
It's the hierarchy of the monkey under universe hollow earth is gonna change.
You bite your fucking tongue, that movie's gonna be great.
He has that fancy arm thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he gets the mech arm.
Oh man.
Sick.
But, anyway. Thanks for coming out.
Yeah,
thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
We're gonna need to have you back on again. We have some other ideas.
Yes, sir.
And also, we need to have a David Lynch's Dune watch and then talk about it.
Yeah. As long as Shai Hulud comes to pick me up whenever I call, I will be there. Yeah.
I mean, you hear thumping rhythmically on the ground is all you need to do. And Shai Hulud will answer.
Welcome back anytime, buddy.
Yes.
Pleasure. No, this is great. And happy to be here and celebrate, you know, what a joyous occasion yesterday was.
Cake. Yeah.
And, you know, it was Nolan winning, yes. Dave's birthday, you guys having 2 years down on this pod. So,
yeah.
Feels like
Avnish brought us cake. You weren't here.
Yeah,
we have cake in the fridge.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, if you're listening to this, go buy yourself a cake and you can just
have your cake and eat it too.
Celebrate along with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll be back for our regular scheduled programming in 2 weeks.
Yes, sir.
And until then, we love you.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good night and a good week and a good 2 weeks.
Bye.